Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump approved new sanctions on Iran while stopping short for a third time of reimposing harsh sanctions intended to push Tehran to give up nuclear weapons research. Mr. Trump said he was waiving the nuclear sanctions for the last time in order to give Congress and European allies 120 days to improve the agreement or face U.S. abandonment of the pact. Robert Malley is conflict resolution specialist and president of International Crisis Group.
That's what creates this constant feeling of fragility about the deal, which is at some point the Iranians may say, wait a minute, our deal was we get economic relief, you get nuclear relief. Right now you want the nuclear relief and you want to chip away at the economic benefits we're getting. At some point they may decide it's not worth it for them.
According to the White House, any new Iran deal would have to cover Iran's ballistic missile and limit its nuclear breakout period indefinitely. President Trump's vulgar comments to U.S. lawmakers explaining his opposition to Haitian and African immigrants has sparked outrage and condemnation at home and abroad. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville called the comments racist.
This isn't just a story about vulgar language. It's about opening the door to humanity's worst side. It's about validating and encouraging racism and xenophobia that will potentially disrupt and even destroy the lives of many people.
Trump has denied the comments, which reportedly said migrants from Africa come from S-hole countries. President Trump's physician on Friday declared him in excellent health after his first known physical checkup since his inauguration nearly a year ago. It was done at Walter Reed National Hospital. Well, Walter Reed National, I should say, since federal health privacy laws also cover the president, he doesn't have to disclose any more information. This is VOA News. The bodies of two more crew members of an Iranian oil tanker have been recovered after a collision last week between the tanker and a Chinese cargo ship. Chinese state media say the bodies were recovered Saturday morning on the deck of the adrift still burning Sanchi. A body found earlier this week is believed to be another of the 32 crew members, which included 30 Iranians and two Bangladeshis. Pope Francis visits Chile and Peru next week, and it's a trip that was meant to focus on the concerns of indigenous people, but it's now likely to be overshadowed by the church's sex abuse scandal in Chile and political troubles in Peru. Only a few days ahead of the trip, vandals in Chile firebombed three churches in the capital, Santiago, and left a note that read that Pope Francis, the next bomb, will be in your robe. A survey by three leading UN agencies finds that more than three quarters of the more than 1 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon are now living below the poverty line of less than $4 a day. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA.
After nearly 7 years of war, the UN survey finds Syrian refugees in Lebanon are poorer and finding it ever more difficult to make ends meet. It also shows refugee households on average spend $98 per person per month. Nearly half that sum goes toward food. The UN agencies conducting the survey report most of the refugees need to borrow money for food to cover health expenses and pay rent. It says almost 9 out of every 10 refugees end up in debt.
Researchers say climate change is responsible for the vast majority of green sea turtles in the northern Great Barrier Reef off Australia being female. The scientists from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say the temperature at which turtle eggs incubate determines the sex of hatchlings. We get more from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Almost the entire green turtle population in parts of the northern Great Barrier Reef in Australia is now female. A study of about 200,000 animals in the reef's northern waters found them to be overwhelmingly female. The research was published in the journal Current Biology. There are concerns that the future of the endangered reptile is increasingly precarious. In the Southern Barrier Reef, where conditions are cooler, about two-thirds are female. Researchers say that while they hope for some milder years to produce more males, they expect temperatures to continue to rise.
It's Phil Mercer reporting for VOA in Sydney. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
You cannot dismiss entire countries and continents as shitholes whose entire populations, who are not white, are therefore not welcome.
The UN Human Rights Office criticizes US President Donald Trump's comments.
PND, our leader, and the UPND as a party had plans to politicize the cholera outbreak for purposes of gaining political mileage, cheaply so.
The leader of the Zambian main opposition party calls on the government to release all detained protesters.
This new ZANU-PF leader, that they postpone elections for at least 3 years whilst they are sorting out succession issues.
And Zimbabweans express concern about rumors elections scheduled for this year could be postponed. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Human Rights Office has sharply criticized U.S. President Donald Trump's vulgar comments on migrants from Africa and Haiti, calling them shocking and shameful. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
President Trump's crude outbursts against migrants from the African continent and Haiti have set off a firestorm of global rebuke. One of the latest to weigh in on this controversy is the UN Human Rights Office. Agency spokesman Rupert Colville calls Trump's remarks clearly racist.
You cannot dismiss entire countries and continents as shitholes whose entire populations, who are not white, are therefore not welcome. The positive comment on Norway makes the underlying sentiment very clear.
Colville recalls Trump's earlier comments vilifying Mexicans who cross the border as rapists, and Trump's retweeting of anti-Muslim propaganda from a far-right British group. He says policy proposals targeting entire groups on grounds of nationality or religion go against universal values.
So this isn't just a story about vulgar language. It's about opening the door to humanity's worst side. It's about validating and encouraging racism and xenophobia that will potentially disrupt and even destroy the lives of many people.
Colville warns comments by a major political figure, such as the President of the United States, can have damaging and dangerous consequences. Trump's remarks were made at a meeting of congressional leaders working on a bipartisan immigration deal to allow some 800,000 so-called dreamers to remain in the United States. UN Human Rights Chief Zayd Raad al-Hussein has previously said the future of the dreamers should not be used as a bargaining chip to negotiate restrictive immigration measures. He said the young people are human beings, not commodities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Also, while condemning President Trump's comment on Africans and Haitians, one South Sudanese says the majority of Africans are hardworking and come to the U.S. to make a better life for themselves. My colleague Ian Bior has more from Washington.
David Dow, a congressional legislative fellow and a former lost boy of Sudan, was shocked yesterday when reports surfaced of President Donald Trump using a foul word to describe certain countries. Dow, who spends a lot of his time working on South Sudan issues, says many Africans contribute to American society in a very positive way.
The majority of the Africans who come here are already here on the merit-based immigration. So if you look at a lot of Africans there, that they are Ethiopian, South African, or Nigerians, many of them are doctors, they are nurses, you know, they are dentists, and what have you.
In a tweet Friday morning, Trump distanced himself from the reports, saying his language during the meeting on immigration was tough, but it was not the language he used. Dow says the damage has already been done.
You know, because of the global connectivity, you know, the social media and everything, they will see a comment like this from the leader of the free world. And how will I be telling them that America is the greatest country on, you know, on the planet if they hear things like this from the leader of the free world? So this is where it becomes very tricky because, you know, you have so many people in Africa and in South Sudan in particular that have nothing, that are refugees in Kenya, Uganda, and all over the place. And their only hope is to find an opportunity to resettle either in the U.S., Canada, or Australia. You know, but when they hear comments like this, plus other things that have been going on, like, you know, the issue of, you know, policing in Australia with the South Sudanese community, that is, it discourages people from trying to seek, you know, opportunities outside. The people that could come to these countries and be doctors and be, you know, and join the military and do other great things.
The reaction to the news came from around the world. Speaking to the Associated Press, African Union spokeswoman Eba Kalando said, quote, given the historical reality of how many Africans arrived in the United States as slaves, this statement flies in the face of all accepted behavior and practice, end quote. The level of alarm was shared by Dow, who says the idea is to work towards a better world.
The goal is to always make Africa better, you know, and when you hear comments like that, it makes you feel like you haven't done anything over the last years, you know, of your life as a volunteer or as an advocate, you know. So the one hope for an encouraging comment. So, but a comment like this, it make me feel like, you know, if he thinks like that and he is the leader of the world, then is he going to give money next year for, you know, to fight anger or AIDS or other things in Africa?
While his country regularly makes headlines for conflict, hunger, and a growing refugee population, Dow believes that the best is yet to come for South Sudan.
Majority of the South Sudanese populations are below the age of 34. That is a bright future, and it is a future that we can work to create an alternative society that will be different from what our current uncle and fathers are running. So there is a better South Sudan that is on the horizon that the world could be proud of, you know, in comparison to what we have now. You know, what we have now are people that are holding grudges from the war they fought together. And it's also the attitude of get rich quick because of the people in power trying to grab as much resources as they can, you know, and that is why we are where we are now. So I want the American people to understand that the idea of South Sudan that, you know, America supported to be free is still there. You know, it's still there. South Sudan will be the country we all desire.
Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of the Zambia main opposition party, United Party for National Development, or UPND, has called on the government to release all detained protesters. His call came after a protest in the capital Lusaka turned violent and led to the destruction of property. The ruling Patriotic Front Party, or PF, accused the opposition party of masterminding the protests which turned violent. The PF also said the opposition party is using the recent cholera outbreak to score cheap political mileage and to make President Edgar Lungu unpopular. But the UPND denied the allegations as yet another proof that the government has porous ideas and appears incapable to resolve the challenges the country faces. For reaction, I reached Sunday Chanda, media director for the Zambian ruling Patriotic Front Party.
Mr. Hakainde Hichilema knows very well that the arrested protesters are his cadres. These are people who were sent to disturb public peace in Kanyama yesterday. They bent tires on the road. They set ablaze a truck that was donated to the area to help with garbage collection. One police officer was assaulted, and we know that there's been, I think, about 55 of them who've been apprehended. There's video footage to that effect of UPND cadres protesting and demonstrating and rioting, raising the UPND symbol and chanting UPND slogans. Mr. Hakainde Hichilema is in actual sense admitting to the allegation that we have made that the UPND planned that whole thing. And we've said that the UPND has tried, and Mr. Hakainde Hichilema in person, they've tried to politicize the cholera outbreak which is very unfortunate.
Some Zambians I spoke with who were at the scene were saying that it is not UPND cadres and that these were traders who were forcibly removed by the army, and that on two or three different occasions in separate places, they were removed from their trading places, and the government has failed to provide them any new place for them to trade. So to blame the UPND is just political calculation from the ruling Patriotic Front. What do you say to that?
Far from it. The traders have cooperated with the interventions that the government has put in place. There's been a multi-sectoral approach. You've got the UN agencies involved. What happened is that 3 days ago, we had information that the UPND leader and the UPND as a party had plans to politicize the cholera outbreak for purposes of gaining political mileage, cheaply so. And there's video footage to that effect, and we can avail Voice of America the video footage of the UPND cadres who were demonstrating and raising the UPND symbol, chanting UPND slogans and saying that we want change.
But Mr. Chanda, isn't it true that the government has not been able to resolve the problem of the cholera outbreak? It is a true fact that people are afraid. So if somebody is politicizing it, as you said, don't you think that the government has itself to blame for not resolving this?
No. No, Peter, I can tell you that the cholera situation in Lusaka is totally under control as we speak. And we expect that in the next 10 days, the cholera situation in Lusaka is going to be a totally different story. And it will be brought under control. You know very well that we've got millions of vaccines that are in the country. And the cholera vaccine program has already been rolled out. I think we're now about 4 days old into that program. The response from the masses has been overwhelming. And so if anybody alleges that the government is not doing enough to manage the cholera situation in Lusaka, they're not being candid enough, they're being economical with truth, I can tell you that watch the next 10 days, the next 9 days, the cholera situation in Lusaka is going to be a totally different story.
Isn't the government contravening the Constitution because the Constitution guarantees freedom of expression, speech, and assembly? And the mere fact that they went on demonstration protesting against what they say is government insensitivity and inability to govern effectively and for them to be detained violates the Constitution, they said. How do you react to that?
It doesn't violate the Constitution. As a matter of fact, Peter, you know that much as we have the Constitution guaranteeing the freedom of expression, the same Constitution guarantees that we're going to protect public order and public peace. Public security is a very important component of our coexistence as a people. And so if an individual thinks that their freedom of expression is paramount to that of the rest of society, then that becomes a problem. Because my freedom of expression and my human rights mustn't infringe on your rights. And what happened yesterday was disturbance to public peace. If people are carrying out a peaceful demonstration, that's a different story. A peaceful protest, that's a different story. But you have tires being bent on the road. You have them setting ablaze a truck that was donated to collect garbage in that area. You have them stoning the police station in that area. You have them setting ablaze a motor vehicle, a private vehicle, parked at the police station. That is not expression of one's right. That is criminality, and the laws are very clear. And whoever is a perpetrator, including those that are pushing them, must be brought to book.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for the Zambian ruling Patriotic Front Party, or PF. He spoke with me from Lusaka. Meanwhile, in neighboring Zimbabwe, Zimbabweans are expressing concern about rumors that elections scheduled for this year could be postponed. This following a meeting between President Emmerson Mnangagwa and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. The president is alleged to have struck a deal with Tsvangirai, who is the leader of the main opposition movement for Democratic Change faction, to have the elections postponed. But officials have denied the speculation, saying the president went to visit the ailing opposition leader and also denied any deal was reached between the two rivals. For analysis, I read Zimbabwean political analyst George Nkwananzi in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Actually, this is not the first time such a rumor has circulated. It has done such rounds several times before, where it has been alleged that leaders of the Movement for Democratic Change, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, even during the time when the coup happened and before Mnangagwa himself was formally inaugurated as president of Zimbabwe, it was expected that there was a deal that was expected to be struck between Morgan Tsvangirai, the leader of MDC, and the new ZANU-PF leader, that they postpone elections for at least 3 years whilst they are sorting out succession issues in the two respective parties. So now that such a rumor has resurfaced, and there was an event where the state president, who is the leader of ZANU-PF, actually made a visit to Morgan Tsvangirai under the pretext that he was going to see him as an ailing man. And the information coming now from Professor Jonathan Moyo to say that indeed such a meeting was not about visiting a sick man. It was about striking a deal to cheat the people of Zimbabwe out of their electoral rights.
I understand some Zimbabweans are very surprised at this latest rumor that the election could be delayed, and that they are surprised even that the MDC, the main opposition party, appears not to be prepared if elections are organized this year.
Actually, to say that they are surprised is an understatement. They are shocked that a party in the opposition, which they trusted for so long, has decided to betray them and hobnob and enter into some Nicodemus scheme with unelected leaders of ZANU-PF, who are now in charge of government affairs in Zimbabwe, to postpone an election. You know, in Zimbabwe, elections have always been held whenever they are supposed to be held. There's never been a postponement. You may have them perhaps brought forward, but never, you know, postponed. So this scheme is actually nefarious, and the people of Zimbabwe are actually justified to be shocked that somebody is trying to sidestep, you know, constitutional processes and try to have something smudged upon them.
Some argue that it would be a violation of the constitution as it stands now, even if a deal is struck to have the elections postponed for the next few years.
It is definitely a violation of the constitution, and in any case, it is not up to ZANU-PF or MDCT or whatever they call themselves to enter into such a deal. Fine, we are aware they are the two parties that have members in parliament, but that does not entitle them to change the constitution of Zimbabwe, change the timelines when elections are supposed to be held, and then they decide to do their own thing. So that cannot be allowed, and the people of Zimbabwe will be mobilized to ensure that they resist such kind of a scheme.
From the preparation of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, how confident are Zimbabweans reposing trust in the ability of the Electoral Commission to organize free and fair, credible elections this year, particularly with all these rumors circulating?
I think the biggest tragedy in Zimbabwe in terms of its electoral processes has always been the lack of confidence and trust that Zimbabweans have in their national electoral commission. You know that it has been headed for quite some time by a lady called Makarao, who was once a ZANU-PF MP and a party functionary. She has since been removed and replaced by, with somebody even close to the military junta that is in power right now, which actually worsens the diffidence part, the lack of confidence part on the people of Zimbabwe in ZEC's ability to hold free and fair elections. So even if they were held today or 2 years later or three, there's always been this deficit of confidence and trust, in the ability and the legitimacy of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission supervise and hold the elections in Zimbabwe, in an acceptable way to everybody.
George Inkwananzi is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. Meanwhile, voter registration is underway in Cameroon ahead of nationwide elections later this year. However, the electoral body is encountering both voter apathy and challenges due to insecurity in some parts of the country. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kezeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
The staff of Cameroon Elections Management Body, ELECAM, move from shop to shop at the Buzim Fundi Market in Yaoundé, convincing potential voters to have their names registered on electoral lists. 34-year-old business lady Winifred Way decides not to sign up.
Last election year, I went to vote. I saw that somebody have already voted. I saw my name that somebody have already voted and I was not the one. And political parties are complaining that the elections are always rigged by the ruling government. So I don't think my voting will change anything.
Cameroon plans to hold local council, parliamentary and presidential elections starting in September. If held separately, the polls could continue into October. Few see much suspense as President Paul Biya seeks re-election. He is one of Africa's longest ruling heads of state. The ruling party has controlled parliament and most local councils for decades. ELECAM officials who are appointed by the president have dismissed allegations of rigging as unfounded. Besides the voter apathy, election workers are struggling with insecurity in several parts of the country. Cameroon is currently experiencing tensions in its two English-speaking regions where separatists have declared independence for a new state they call Ambazonia. The year-long crisis has led to bouts of violent unrest. Voter registration has been suspended in some places like Manyu Division in southwestern Cameroon, where there have been regular clashes between the military and armed separatists. Meanwhile, the Central African State also continues to battle Boko Haram in its far north region. The suicide bombings that re-intensified in mid-2017 have abated, but many people are yet to return home. As of November 30, the UN Refugee Agency reports a total of 240,000 internally displaced people in Cameroon, nearly all of them in the far north. Pauline Jowe, official of the opposition political party, the Movement for the Defense of the Republic, says the Boko Haram conflict has left people unable to register to vote.
Ce précieux sésame aujourd'hui se fait très rare. Surtout que certaines postes d'identification dans nos zones d'influence.
He says many potential voters are unable to acquire national identity cards because police identification stations in some border zones were closed due to Boko Haram terrorism. He says if the elections management body ELECAM and the government want many more people of voting age to register, they should reopen the identification offices. ELECAM says it can only move into conflict zones in the north and some villages and towns in the Anglophone regions to begin voter registration once the military declares those areas safe. The electoral body aims to register 10 million from the estimated 12 million people in the country aged 20 and above and eligible to vote. So far, 6.5 million voters have registered. Abdoulaye Babale, head of ELECAM, says they will intensify their efforts.
We are developing a new strategy. In rural areas, generally people take their time. we are going to have caravans, informing them long in advance, and then we implicate the traditional rulers and civil society to help us, because time is against us. In medium cities, we also have our caravans and multiply our enrolling stations in order to catch as many voters as possible.
No date or dates for the polls have been set. Voter registration is scheduled to end the day President Paul Biya makes that announcement. The president can postpone the elections if calm does not return to hot spots. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, thanks to my colleague Douglas Impuga and the rest of the Nightline team who held the fort while I was away. Sincere thanks also goes out to the Amuzu and Sosie families in Accra and in Chang and beyond. Thank you very much. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Feeling the way that she did move. Seeing the mood is right, and I'm ready to take you on now. See, baby, don't doubt me. I know what doubt you. Me and you by outside. Yeah. Tonight, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it by your side. Said I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it.
She rocking now, rocking now. Make my body wanting now, wanting now. The way she break it down, break it down. Make my body hungry now.
She break down. Oh, 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 oh,
Never. See the blood. Ambiance sentimentale.
Yes, sir.
Avec TK Scalp. Magic System.
L'affaire là, ça fatigue le dos, hein.
Judge me, and I won't judge you, 'cause it could get up.
change the subject. You're gonna start asking me questions like, was she attractive? Was she an actress? Maybe the fact is, you're hearing rumors about me and saw some pictures online saying they got you so worried, making you wish you were blind. Before we start acting crazy, saying some things will be great, can we just slow it down and press reset? You're beautiful, so please don't judge me, and I won't judge you, cause it could get ugly before it gets beautiful. So please don't judge me, and I won't judge you.
Can never go one more when you're second. Every day by day, I just they celebrate. Oh. Everything I do, we just they penetrate. Oh. I just want to say, oh, thank you, Jehovah. See, I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. Oh, no, 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 no. I just want to say, oh, thank you, Jehovah. Oh. Can I walk to go father, father, eh? Father, father, eh? I don't want to know, yeah, no. Father, father, eh? Father, father, eh? My putty rug, one never level. I call look if I follow, one day you must quit. See, I come from east, the enter street, brother, you know. Hey, Jimmy, there, I don't do beast, you already know. I know now, yellow moon don't get the effect. Oh, now yellow may go get to yao. I'm an unwrap of balloon button gets a head. I saw no balloon button gako yao. I came with so under conquer. My love with them just a wonder. So wish come up on your under. I fire them with the thunder. I wanna cozy one who knew you. No, no, no. Man, no, chill. I cover myself. Every day by day, I just they celebrate. Everything I do, we just they penetrate. I just want to say, oh, thank you, Jehovah.
I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. Oh no, 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 no. I just want to sell that ghetto. Every day by day, I just they celebrate. Oh. Everything I do, we just they penetrate. Oh. I just want to say, oh, thank you to God. See, I'm living large, I get angels for my ghetto. Never forget where I come from, not from ghetto. Oh, no, 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 no. I just want to say, oh, thank you to God.
They call me bad.
I woke up with a fear this morning, but I can taste you on the tip of my tongue. Alone without no warning, you're by my side and we've got smoke in our lungs. Last night we were way up, kissing in the back of the cab, and then you say, love, baby, let's go back to my flat. Good.
Yangoyo.
Eloko. La chose là.
Oto tombe. Yangoyo.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if nothing touches the palm leaves, they do not rustle. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is assisting law enforcement in Senegal with a donation of critical, non-lethal law enforcement equipment and materiel to the country's national police. At a ceremony on December 20th at Senegal's National Police Academy, U.S. Ambassador to Senegal, Tulinabo Mashingi, said the U.S. counts on Senegal as a crucial partner in the region and the police as a vital bulwark to the multitude of threats and challenges facing both nations. Terrorism remains a scourge that we must continue to fight, and this donation of equipment, such as computers, projectors, night vision goggles, crime scene kits, and protective equipment will provide additional support to bolster the National Police's mission, said Ambassador Mashingi. He noted that recently the embassy's Regional Security Office and the Department of State's Bureau of Counterterrorism and Countering Violent Extremism wrapped up a training series implemented by the Bureau of Diplomatic Security's Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program designed to better protect against and mitigate the impact of a terrorist attack on soft targets for the Senegalese law enforcement community and first responders, including interagency coordination of counterterrorism operations mechanism established by presidential decree last year, CICO. Altogether, approximately 110 personnel have benefited from these recent training events for a significant engagement between the U.S. and Senegal. The latest U.S. donation, worth nearly $500 million CFA, is a significant contribution to the ongoing partnership. Paraphrasing Senegal's President Macky Sall from the Forum for Peace and Security, Ambassador Mashingi said the need for integrated solutions across the region was emphasized. Training and equipment are at the heart of this integrated solution, and we are happy to provide this protective and didactic gear to the government of Senegal to seek these integrated solutions. To this end, we are glad to bolster the police officers and especially all the first responders who we depend upon to act in the event of troubles or a deliberate attack, said Ambassador Mashingi. To our friends in the National Police and other Senegalese security services, thank you for your assistance. We hope this equipment will help you with your mission.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.